The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
There's President Trump yesterday during his CPAC speech over in Orlando, Florida. Of course, the ballroom, it didn't have that many people in it. There were people lining the streets, though, to see his motorcade go by as he showed up for the event. And then the speech itself went on for 90 minutes, and it was classic Donald Trump, as we'll get to on today's program. We thank you for joining us. You're listening to The Trumpet Daily. You can get the live stream of this program at thetrumpet.com website, thetrumpet.com/live, and then you can send us some feedback, td@kpcg.fm. Well, we made a point last week about how that Joe Biden didn't have or hasn't had a State of the Union address. And in a lot of ways, what you heard yesterday, if you listen to the real president, Donald Trump, you got the State of the Union as he spent the first part of his speech talking about all that has happened just in the last 5 or 6 weeks. The nation-destroying policies of the fake president, Joe Biden. And then he talked about some of the accomplishments of his 4 years, Donald Trump. And then he stood his ground, even after all of these weeks, all of this pressure, people even from conservative media saying that, well, because of what happened on January the 6th, we've just got to cave in and surrender, and we've got to stop bringing up the subject of the election steal, the fraud. And here comes Donald Trump, and he stands his ground. And he says, no, actually it was stolen. And everyone knows it. I thought one of the more compelling bits, and it was just an anecdote that he had in passing. I didn't bring the clip, but he was talking about this congressman who is running for his seat in a swing state. And coming up to the election, he had told his wife, I guess he passed all of this along to President Trump later, but he told his wife, you know, I don't think I'm going to win this. I'm just going up against a lot in this district. The district is becoming more, I guess, more blue. In any event, the night before or on the day of the election, he sees all of this fervent support coming from Donald Trump supporters and all the signs around the community and so on. And he told his wife, he said, no, I think I'm going to win this. And he did, as it happens. He did. He was in a swing state district. Donald Trump didn't say who it was. But he said to Donald Trump later, and I did win thanks to you, thanks to your momentum, thanks to your support, thanks to the enthusiasm that voters had for you. And you lost? And somehow you lost? That can't be right. That can't be fair. It can't be a fair and square election if that's what happened. Well, that happened all over the nation, at least in those swing states. And you have people today who are saying that, well, he needs to be prosecuted, he needs to be impeached, he needs to be convicted so that he can't run again. Why don't they want him to run again? Because they know, as he said yesterday, that he will win again. He put it best. It may be that I'll run a third time and beat them. He beat them in 2016. He beat them in 2020. And here he is yesterday jokingly saying, well, not so jokingly as it turns out, that it may be that I might just run for a third time. Here's clip one.
Actually, as you know, they just lost the White House, but it's one of those things. But who knows? Who knows? I may even decide to beat them for a third time, okay? Beat them for a third time.
Who knows, he said. Who knows? I may even decide to beat them for a third time. I had quite a few windows. I was watching the speech yesterday on my computer. So just for fun, I brought up as many feeds as I could find showing the speech. On Periscope, Donald Trump had 7,500 people. That's, I guess, through Twitter. 7,500 viewers. This was, I guess, around the peak level. George News, 20,000 viewers watching the president's CPAC speech. At The Hill, 46,000. I was watching the Fox News feed. 283,000 people watching that one, that stream. And then Right Side Broadcasting, that's been the most popular throughout the campaign season and beyond. That had over 409,000, right side broadcasting, 409,000, almost a half million people. And then at Rumble, that's the alternative to Twitter and Facebook for those that don't want to be censored. Rumble at its peak had 316,000 viewers. You add them all up, I didn't do it, but you add it all up and it's well over a million. And compare that, I didn't do this again as well, but compare that to any speech by the fake president. And you see why they want to go after him still. They do not want him returning to politics ever again because they know he'll win. They know it. They know he won in 2020. They know, they knew there was no chance for the basement candidate to win. And so they cheated. And like the president said yesterday, what about what happened at 3 a.m. in the morning? Of course, a big part of the speech, he was talking about election reform. And he wants to get all of the states right on board with that. So, and you think about, you know, those that would say, well, you know, how is this not going to happen again, given the level of cheating? And that certainly could play out. But we know God has a hand in these events. We know that God allowed what he allowed on November the 3rd and also on January the 6th. These things could have gone a different way so easily. So easily. But to just see... to see this individual come out and to stand his ground. A few weeks ago, I talked about how that our struggles define us. I mentioned that biography by H.W. Brands, I think it was, and what he said about Andrew Jackson, the seventh president of the United States. His struggles defined him. And here is this monumental struggle that President Trump has gone through. And again, there were things he could have done differently, I suppose. And my father recently, he referred to that six-part series by Patrick Byrne, I think it is, who didn't, I've referred to this briefly before, but he didn't vote for Donald Trump, but he knows that there was a massive amount of cheating. And he said in that series that Donald Trump's closest advisors, they did not serve him well in November and December because they wanted to surrender. They were worried. They were worried about a civil war. And if you read that Time magazine article, President Trump referred to that yesterday as well, where they just admitted it. They admitted it. We cheated. We pulled it off. The Time magazine piece says that they had their army ready. The radical left army, the protesters, they were ready to do more burning and looting if they didn't get their way on November 3rd. So those protesters were told to stand down because the cheating was so effective. They pulled it off. The art of the steal. President Trump referred to that yesterday. In any event, Patrick Byrne, the point that he makes is that there were so many people, even close up to Donald Trump, that just wanted to give in and surrender. And then comes January the 6th, and the few that were remaining, the few that were standing their ground, the few that were fighting, so many of them caved in to the pressure as well. I noticed last night, I didn't bring the clip, but Steve Hilton, he's a commentator on Fox News, a pretty sharp thinker, some pretty good analysis coming from him and his program each Sunday night. He asked the president about January the 6th. He said, it has been reported that when that was unfolding, you were watching and actually you liked what you were seeing. You liked this. And the president responded and said, well, that's just fake reporting. I wasn't even watching the news that afternoon. But here's Fox News and so many commentators that have just, that we used to, we've played clips from many of their shows over the years on this program. And in quite a few cases, you know, they're not even as enjoyable to listen to anymore. Because the spirit of surrender is so strong. We're defined by our struggles. How are we going to stand up to pressure when it's so intense? Well, in the case of President Trump, he came out yesterday. He came out swinging. Here's a little bit from the president about the election and how that it was rigged and stolen. Clip two.
We have a very sick and corrupt electoral process that must be fixed immediately. This election was rigged, and the Supreme Court and other courts didn't want to do anything about it. They didn't have the courage, the Supreme Court. They didn't have the courage to act. They should be ashamed of themselves for what they've done to our country. They didn't have the guts or the courage to make the right decision. They didn't want to talk about it.
He's completely right. He's completely right. They didn't have the courage. Now, again, this could have played out differently, and it still, there's still, the story's not quite over. So we want to keep God's perspective in all of this. But here he is not only exposing the evil within the radical left, he's exposing the evil and the weakness that's there in his own party. That's there in a court that he's helped to fill up three of the judges. He appointed himself. And they didn't have the courage to act. What will history have to say about their actions or lack thereof at this time of struggle, at this time of intense struggle and intense pressure coming from these radical leftist revolutionaries? If you don't stand up to them, they will devour you. They will devour you. And so here's President Trump saying to his fellow Republicans, look, you've got to stand up and fight, or else they're just going to roll right over you. And that's happened in many cases. He actually listed the Never Trumpers by name, the people in Congress, the senators. He went through it name by name. Here he is again, giving some advice to the Republicans in his party. And he, by the way, stressed that he's not interested in starting a third party. And so that's some, I mean, this was a confident speech. This was someone who knows that he's in charge, at least in charge of the Republican Party. It's someone who knows that he's actually the president. He was the one legitimately elected. Here he is admonishing his own party at CPAC. Clip three.
Now more than ever is the time for tough, strong, and energetic Republican leaders who have spines of steel. We need strong leadership. We cannot have leaders who show more passion for condemning their fellow Americans than they have ever shown for standing up to Democrats, the media, and the radicals who want to turn America into a socialist country.
He's standing alone, as we've been saying in the Trumpet magazine and at the Trumpet website. standing alone against this radical left movement that wants to destroy the United States as we know it, or turn, as he said, turn America into a socialist country. He went on in talking about this, as he said, this vicious movement, clip four.
Democrats are vicious. Remember this, it's true. Democrats are vicious, he said, evil. Well, there is evil there. But they're vicious, they're smart, and they do one thing. You gotta hand it to them. They always stick together. You don't have Mitt Romney's in the group. They always stick together.
And again, he's completely right about this. They are unified in their hatred for the United States. They are unified in the intent to transform the United States, fundamentally transform the United States of America. It's quite a contrast when you just listen to this 90-minute speech and compare it. Well, you could compare it to Joe Biden and him fumbling around for a few minutes. But, of course, as we know, there's an Antiochus behind the fake presidency. There's Barack Obama, who's coming out in his podcasts and such. And, again, reminding America of just how evil it is through and through, mainly the white people, the systemic racism. He was on the podcast, I believe there's two episodes that have come out, him sitting down with a musician. But Sam put together just a snippet from, I believe, volume two of this podcast series. Here's clip 12.
So if you ask me, theoretically, are reparations justified? The answer is yes. There's not much question, right? That the wealth of this country, the power of this country, was built in significant part, not exclusively, maybe not even the majority of it, but a large portion of it was built on the backs of slaves. This then brings us to, could you actually get that kind of justice? Could you get a country to agree and own that history? And my judgment was that as a practical matter, that was unattainable. We can't even get this country to provide decent schooling for inner city kids. And what I saw during my presidency was that the politics of white resistance and resentment, the talk of welfare queens and the talk of the undeserving poor and the backlash against affirmative action, all that made the prospect of actually proposing any kind of coherent, meaningful reparations program struck me as politically not only a non-starter, but potentially counterproductive.
So that's Barack Obama last week saying that, you know, the reparations are justified, but that, well, then why didn't you do something during your 8 years? He says, well, the politics of white resistance, it's because of racism. I knew it was a non-starter. I knew I wasn't going to be able to get this through. There's just too much hatred coming from the whites. That's what he's saying. Now, the truth of it is, you could go back and look at 2008 when he was campaigning. When he was campaigning for president, I've got this in, I think it's a Fox News report from August 2008. The headline, Barack Obama opposes reparations for slavery. He opposed it. That's what he campaigned on. That's what he campaigned on. It says, Barack Obama opposes offering reparations to the descendants of slaves, putting him at odds with some black groups and leaders. And then they quote him. I've said in the past, and I'll repeat it again, that the best reparations we can provide are good schools in the inner city and jobs for people who are unemployed. Now he comes along and says, oh yeah, we need it. It's justified. And the only reason I didn't go after it is because of white resistance. That's just the way that the devil operates. Changing the story from one day to the next. And he says it in a beautiful sounding tone, angel of light. And what's the truth? What actually happened in 2008? And why? Why is he telling a different story today? The same podcast, by the way, he talked about someone that said a racially insensitive comment, and he went and punched him in the nose and broke his nose. And this is, he's had two autobiographies. He's been around, he's had probably more people fawning over him and his leadership than anyone in modern history of America. And this story has never come up, just suddenly appeared out of thin air on this podcast. And there's quite a few commentators calling it into question, wondering if it actually even happened. In any event, that's an aside. This is from that 2008 article. It says, but this is not a position Obama adopted just for the presidential campaign. He voiced the same concerns about reparations during his successful run for the Senate in 2004. So he said it in 2008. No, I'm against it. Look, what we just need is good education. And then 2004, he said the same thing. And now he says, well, absolutely there should be reparations. And the only reason I didn't pursue it is because of white resistance, the politics of white resistance. You see, like I said last week, you see just how fast this is moving and where they're headed. It says here, Obama says an apology would be appropriate but not particularly helpful in improving the lives of black Americans. Reparations could also be a distraction, he said. So that's from Fox in 2008, just giving you some history. But now there should be reparations, and it doesn't matter where you came from. It doesn't matter if your ancestors were fighting for the North. It doesn't matter if your relatives were killed in the Civil War, fighting to try to stamp out slavery. It's just, it's there. It's among all of the whites, and we need to somehow come up with trillions and trillions of dollars. More government spending, more government programs, more government debt. That's what it amounts to. At its core, all of these movements, all of the items on the agenda, at the core, I mean, it's about amassing power, expanding the size of government. That's what it always comes down to. What a contrast, though. No wonder they're chanting, we love you. We love you. For Donald Trump to come along and say, you know what? America's a pretty good place. All things considered. What a blessing it is to live here. Candace Owens made that comment, by the way. She's a black commentator. This was from a few months ago. But listen to what, even with all of our problems, and look, we expose them on this program. America is certainly not. It's certainly not a utopia. It's certainly not God's kingdom on earth. That's coming. Jesus Christ is going to establish God's kingdom on earth. It's going to be headquartered in Jerusalem, in fact. But because of the tremendous blessings and prosperity and abundance that God has just poured down upon Manasseh in fulfillment of his promises in the book of Genesis. We have had it so good, and we have enjoyed so much prosperity and wealth, and really, for the most part, a tremendous amount of peace as well. Now, that's not to say we haven't had to fight for these freedoms enshrined in our founding documents. But this was Candace Owens just talking about living in the United States of America, clip 10.
You can have the option to accept this victim narrative, right? You can have the option to say, I accept this diagnosis of cancer, even though I feel fine, walk fine, and have been living fine my entire life. I accept that it's terminal illness, and I'm going to live like I'm going to die any moment. Mm. Or you can develop a different perspective, and you can develop a victor mentality, as I say. Forget the victim mentality, develop a victor mentality. Look back at your ancestors, look back at your grandparents, look back at what they did, what they lived through, the seeds that they planted so that you can afford to be in the circumstance that you are in today. If you are a Black American and you are breathing in the United States today, you are the luckiest among the luckiest of Black people that have ever lived anywhere on the face of the planet. That is an incredible statement. All of human history, the luckiest Black people that have ever lived on the face of the human planet are the ones that are living and breathing in America today.
That is an incredible statement, as she said there. What a refreshing difference. Someone who just says, look, there's a lot of opportunity here. There's a lot of opportunity for Black people. There's a lot of opportunity for white people. There's a lot of opportunity for everyone in the United States of America. And she happens to be thankful for that. She doesn't want to claim victim status. She wants to claim victor. She wants to be a victor in the United States of America. And that's the message. That's the tone coming from Jeroboam, coming from Donald Trump. Listened to him yesterday talking about Time Magazine and how that they essentially admitted that they stole it. They wanted to brag about it. This is clip 5.
And Democrats even admitted in Time Magazine, which is, I would say, on the liberal side, that they just couldn't hold it in. They had to brag about it. Because what they did, they had to brag about it. They couldn't do it. You got to read the story. It's a disaster. It's a disaster for our country that we can allow something so corrupt to happen. Read that article. I really encourage you. You read that article.
He's talking about the Time Magazine article from a few weeks ago. 6,000-7,000 words, I think it was. Coming from the radical left, where they admitted how everything came together. Well, the one thing that article leaves out, as my father noted recently, it doesn't talk about the fraud, the widespread fraud that happened with the machines, and how that even goes out to an attack from abroad, an attack from without. But Time Magazine certainly got into a lot of other things. So many different levels of the cheating. And you see through it all, this struggle, this fight for the truth. And Donald Trump standing alone, this struggle, I should say, is certainly defining him. And what about the rest of us? Listen to him yesterday talking about the struggle that we're facing, clip 6.
We're in a struggle for the survival of America as we know it. This is a struggle. This is a terrible, terrible, painful struggle. The path ahead will not be easy, but we will win. We are going to win. Ultimately, we always win. And when we do, history will show that this was the moment when we could have given up, when we could have despaired, but instead we chose to keep on pushing forward. The greater the challenge and tougher the task, the more determined we must be to pull through, to triumph. We have to have triumph. We have to have victory.
Pretty inspiring words there. A 90-minute speech. Standing his ground. Standing up to his enemies. And he has the popular support. That's the thing. He doesn't have the support in Washington, D.C. He doesn't always have at least not the strong support among Republicans. He doesn't have the strongest support even from conservative commentators. But he has the majority support of the American people. And they chant for him in ways that they would never chant for Joe Biden or for Barack Obama. It's obvious. People know. It's just like that congressman that said, look, we had all of the polls and we were tracking the favorability and everything leading up to this election. You're the one, Donald Trump. It was the enthusiasm for you that allowed for me to retain my seat in Congress or to gain that seat in Congress. They know. They know. And that's why they're doing everything that they can to try to blot him out, to censor his speech, to cancel him, to convict him, whatever it is. They don't want him to ever get into the arena again because they know what will happen. They know what kind of support he has. Here's one last clip from Donald Trump yesterday, clip 7.
With your help, we will take back the House. We will win the Senate. And then a Republican president will make a triumphant return to the White House. And I wonder who that will be. I wonder who that will be. Who will that be? I wonder.
There's the president yesterday at CPAC. Who will it be? How will this play out? Well, as I say, the story is not yet ended. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. When we come back, we'll touch on that similar theme that we got into a couple weeks ago, standing strong in the midst of trial and test, in the midst of struggle. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily.
Do you believe the United States of America has been mainly a positive force in the world for most of its history? Do you believe that America was at one time a great nation? The United States of America was founded on many biblical principles that were incorporated into the Constitution. This lent to its success and positive influence in the world. But the America of then is not the America of today. To anyone examining the current state of America, this should be alarming. It has been a great nation in time past and is experiencing a temporary resurgence in these end times. But it will only be exactly that, temporary. Our free booklet, Great Again, will explain America's status. It will prove that God has been intimately involved in the rise and resurgence of America under President Donald Trump. It will also explain why God is saving America temporarily, how he was doing it, and what is yet to come in America. There is a spiritual dimension to America's rise and decline as a superpower. This free booklet will explain this dimension and how God will soon make America truly great again. Request your free copy of our book, Great Again, at our website, thetrumpet.com.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily.
I mentioned the example of Gideon a couple weeks ago when we talked about being eager to fight for God. And there's plenty of examples in the Bible to look to. Last week we went through Ephesians 6, the importance, as Paul wrote there, of standing strong, of being strong in the Lord, as Paul said there, and doing everything that we can to stand against our adversary, the devil. Joshua is another excellent example of someone who, and it's really not complicated. That's the thing. It's difficult. It's the straight and narrow way, as Jesus said. It's just like Mr. Armstrong described for the newly begotten. Look, you have chosen the difficult road. There's no way around it. It's going to be easy. I hope you've counted the cost. But the thing of it is, if you keep it simple, the marching orders are pretty clear. You just have to fight. You have to see the enemy. You have to discern the enemy and his tactics. And then, like my father says in the Overcomer booklet, you've got to really concentrate all of your energies on defeating that weakness, overcoming that weakness, conquering that adversary. Joshua is an excellent example. He obviously had to fight his way through into the promised land. But if you read through the book of Joshua, you see over and again where it says that Joshua just tried to do everything that Moses commanded. He just tried to follow the script that was set there before him. He just tried to follow in the steps of Moses. This is Joshua 11 and verse 15. It says, as the Eternal commanded Moses, his servant, so did Moses command Joshua, and so did Joshua. It says he left nothing undone of all that the Eternal commanded Moses. See, he just did everything Moses said to do. Every little detail. It says further, so Joshua took all that land, the hills and the south country and all the land of Goshen and the valley and the plain and the mountain of Israel and the valley of the same, even from Mount Halak that goes up to Seir, even unto Baal-Gad in the valley of Lebanon under Mount Hermon, and all their kings he took and smote them and slew them. Joshua made war a long time with all those kings. It took a long time, about 6 years, to finally take hold of the promised land. God had promised it, but he didn't say it would be easy. He said it would be a struggle. And Joshua, in so many ways, was defined by that struggle. The people of Israel, same thing. So here's all this intense pressure. Just give in, surrender, accept the result. Never mind the thousands of affidavits. Never mind all the weakness that you've seen in the courts. Even the Supreme Court. Even two of the three that you appointed. And he comes out yesterday, President Trump does, and he faces it head on. And he says to those people, you didn't have the courage. You didn't have the courage to act. You didn't have the courage to do what was right, to set it straight, to fix these problems. You just said, I don't want to talk about it. It doesn't have standing, so it's too late. It's too late. They didn't do anything before the election, as Clarence Thomas said recently. They didn't do anything before the election to make sure it didn't happen. And they didn't do anything after the election to make sure it doesn't happen again. Weakness. Weakness through and through. It says in verse 19, there was not a city that made peace with the children of Israel, save the Hivites, the inhabitants of Gibeon. All the others they took in battle. So every single city, every single square inch of that territory, they had to fight for it. Everywhere that Joshua went, he faced resistance. How easy it would have been to just give in and say, you know what, we fought a little bit for the southern half. Let's just stay here. We don't really need that other territory up north. We don't need to go up as far as Mount Hermon. No, we don't need to go that far. Let's just take it easy. Let's just enjoy life. We're defined by our struggles. It says a lot about our character, how we respond to challenges, to difficulties, to resistance, to persecution, to trials and tests. Read through the autobiography of Herbert Armstrong and see just how many trials and tests and difficulties and persecutors he faced daily, particularly in the early years when he was trying to get this work of God off and running. And he just had enemies at every turn. It's, as I said recently, I mean, you can look at this history, whether it's what happened in Joshua or what happened in the history of the Worldwide Church of God, we can look back now in hindsight and just say, well, it was inevitable that, well, Herbert Armstrong, this was supposed to happen. It's prophesied. Well, it was prophesied. But Mr. Armstrong had to do his part. Joshua had to follow in the steps of Moses. This wasn't just inevitable. God had to prepare these men of God to get them ready to fight, to get them ready to stand up for the truth. These individuals shaped history, world events. And God says to you, and he says to me, now you do the same thing. You make an impact. And here's how you do it. You stand up and you fight for God. You stand up and you fight for the truth. Verse 23 says, so Joshua took the whole land according to all that the Eternal said unto Moses, and Joshua gave it for an inheritance unto Israel according to their divisions by their tribes, and the land rested from war. He just followed God's instructions. And it took a courageous, wholehearted spirit on the part of Joshua. It wasn't a complicated formula. It was just difficult to carry out. And for most people, when it gets really difficult, that's when they cave into the pressure. That's when they surrender. And in the spiritual sense, we see it happen more often than it should. People that give up. People that are pursuing baptism or even after baptism. Mr. Armstrong said to the newly begotten, he said, you know, sometimes those attacks from the devil, they're going to be even more intense. After you're baptized. God in 2 Thessalonians 2 says he sent strong delusion to those Laodiceans because they didn't love the truth. He wanted to test their loyalty to the truth. He wanted to test the depth of their love. And so he sent delusion. He sent fair speeches. He sent smooth-sounding words. Notice what it says. I just read this the other day, but this is from Isaiah 29. And Mr. Armstrong said that he met many people over the years that were in this or fell into this category, what's described right here in Isaiah 29 and verse 13. It says, wherefore the Eternal said, forasmuch as this people draw near to me with their mouths and with their lips do honor me, but have removed their heart far from me, and their fear toward me is taught by the precept of men. They say the right things, but their hearts are far from me. Ezekiel 33, same thing, same message. The leaven of hypocrisy, Jesus talked about that. We've got to get rid of it. We've got to remove it. Saying one thing but doing another. Not really being sincere in our belief. You have to respect someone who, even when everyone is saying, just accept it and go on. You have to respect someone who says, nope, we're going to call it out. We're going to tell you the truth. And I'm going to tell you that isn't in the fight, that you lack courage. You don't have the courage that you need to stand up to this evil, to stand up to this vicious movement, to stand up to your adversary. We've got to stand, we've got to do everything that we can, as Paul said in Ephesians 6, to stand against our enemies, to stand up to Satan and his demon army, because they are here, they're confined to this earth, and they're going about seeking whom they can devour. Resist against it, God says. Draw near to God. And he will draw near to you and give you strength. When we come back, we'll conclude today's program with a few emails that have come in from you, the viewer. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We'll be right back.
KPCG-FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily. This is KPCG-FM.
The Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course is a distance learning program that makes the Bible clear and understandable. The Correspondence Course enables enrollees to learn what the Bible itself says about subjects that affect you and the world you live in. This fascinating Bible course highlights and proves what the Bible says about morality, war, religion, terrorism, and other current events, focusing on the root causes of this world's many problems facing man, as well as their solutions. The Bible and this course also focuses on the reason mankind was created in the first place, the way to happiness, accomplishment, and fulfillment, as well as the truth behind important doctrinal questions, such as what happens after we die, the nature of God, the resurrection, the millennium, and other critical subjects. Enroll today in the Herbert W. Armstrong Bible Correspondence Course. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily.
A few emails coming in from some of our listeners. This one here says, just about every day I ask, what is wrong with people? Thank you for explaining what is wrong with some people. I read Raising the Ruins, and I'm so thankful for people like you that know that God wants you, what God wants you to do to protect what the Bible teaches. God always wins, it says. And then another one here writes, I watch The Trumpet Daily every day and frequently while I'm on the treadmill. It says, in the evenings I listen to the podcast. I think the program is well balanced between prophetic events, American politics, how to live, and Bible study. It says, midday I read articles from The Trumpet. Thanks for the vast amount of knowledge. Another one here from Canada says, thank you and to the whole team for all the hard work. We all need God's truth to be set free from the bondage of sin. I've been reading and studying all your books, articles, etc., and watching the radio show TD in the Key of David. My husband was hearing me talk about it and seeing me watch for some time, and he started to watch the programs as well. Another one, just to paraphrase, she talks about, I guess this was in, I don't think I got into this last week. If I did, excuse me for being repetitive, but she talked about, in response to the Ephesians 5 study, just how challenging it was to really be the kind of wife that she knows God says that wives ought to be when you've got so much resistance coming from family and in some cases from husbands. And that it just it made me think about how difficult it is at times. Here again, going back to what we just studied, it is a struggle, and there is going to be resistance, and it is a challenge to really fulfill your God-given role. Of course, you have to put God first above even your own spouse. You can't disobey God and then say, well, I had to submit to my husband. But at the same time, God can really, you read through 1 Peter 3 and you see the help that God gives to individuals that put him first, and how that conduct can even in some cases win over the unconverted mate. Doesn't always happen, and sometimes there will be division because one isn't obeying God. But one thing that we can't compromise on is our loyalty to and our obedience to God the Father. Another one writes here, thanks for the powerful study on Ephesians. You make the study come to life like never before. I surely would be at a loss without The Trumpet. It's my lifeline. Every person that makes the production possible, I thank you. This one here comes from Houston. It says, thank you for the wonderful and inspiring Trumpet Daily Show episodes that you guys have been putting together. They are truly needed in this end time. Another one here, I believe, comes from Texas, talking about the self-righteousness among so many political leaders today, how it's nauseating. It says here, they condemn Ted Cruz for taking his family on a scheduled vacation to Cancun while Texas experiences a deep freeze, like he can fix it. There are 100 senators, 99 can't do their job. There are two senators for each state, 435 members of the House. Nancy Pelosi takes off for a week at a time, multiple times a year. So there you go. Hypocrisy. We see a lot of it. Another one here says, I watch the Trumpet Daily every day, usually live, but sometimes later in the day. Love your program. And it always relates to God's word and prophecy about the only way I can take the news anymore. Well, he talks about some of the scriptures he's been studying of late. This one here, again from Texas, says, thank you so much for your unwavering dedication to God and his message of ultimate importance to the world, praying daily for uninterrupted spiritual nourishment, spiritual food provider, TD, likened to electricity provider, through the TD team and PCG staff. Many blessings received. It says, in this house, on this particular street, amongst complete outages, not one disruption was experienced of electric power, natural gas, or water throughout this epic winter storm. This is in response, or during, I guess, the storm from a couple weeks ago. It says, God is good, and I can certainly provide the needs of his people. Again, thank you, TD team, for the nourishment and sustenance. Another one here says, I'm watching this and just shaking my head at these childish politicians and fake media staff. Another one here comes from Maine, up in the Northeast. It says, one of the best aspects about the truth is that it's always very consistent and does not change. It holds fast in a consistent pattern and is easily provable. It says, I'm very thankful for the Trumpet Daily program, which does the same, points us back to God and what his word says. Thank you for all the hard work that you're doing to keep the truth from completely collapsing in this end time. Another one here says, I listen to your broadcast every weekday, and it's the best part of my day. I started attending church on the Sabbath in September, and it is tough to wait every week so I can see my new friends and brethren. Keep up the wonderful work of God the Father and stay true to the course. Another one here, it says, as always, you're doing an amazing job proclaiming God's truth. Satan wants the truth buried, but God is the one who has final say. God opens and closes doors, not the devil. I think the only thing I'll miss from YouTube is the ability to speed the program up for those times I start watching a few minutes late and want to get caught up so that I'm watching live. Thanks to you and the other presenters for speaking so clearly that even at two times the speed, I can still take everything in. Our thoughts and prayers are with you. Keep up the good work. Two times the speed. Maybe I'm speaking too slow. Maybe I need to speed it up like Ben Shapiro or something so that it's impossible to follow at two times the speed. In any event, you're not alone. I've heard from others over the years that do try to fast, maybe not two times, but they try to speed it up to some degree so that they can make sure they get through all of the content every day. People, of course, are busy, and we do appreciate you taking the time that you do to visit the trumpet.com website, to listen to this program, to watch the Key of David's on Sundays or Saturdays, whenever it is over the weekend. There really is a lot to be said for filling up on that spiritual nourishment, particularly as so many of these viewers point out, at a time when truth is hard to come by. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll look forward to meeting up with you again tomorrow.